It's the Vinnie Randall Show.
Welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And this powerful show brings you conversations with today's stars and tomorrow's legends. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the ride. Come on.
It's the Benny Randall Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another edition of the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And like always, you know you can join me at BennyRandall.com, or you can go to my private community at BennyOnDemand.com. That's with an I-E, right? And you enjoying this powerful conversation right here on Bashani Radio app. Exclusive, baby. Or you can listen online at BashaniRadio.com. It's not a game, it's a lifestyle. And like always, we have another exciting show. Today's guest is Melissa Wyatt. Is an innovative and forward-thinking serial entrepreneur, real estate developer, coach, and mentor who has spent decades honing her skills through multiple startups. Melissa is the powerhouse behind MW Enterprises, LLC, a privately managed and diversified real estate company with holdings in excess of $7 million, headquartered in Los Angeles, and focused on acquisition, development, management of residential, multifamily, small office, and commercial properties, as well as undeveloped land. She ain't playing. You hear me? She is not playing up in here. Since the ripe age of 13, Melissa Wyatt has led efforts to strengthen her community and advocate for the marginalized. In addition to her professional background, Melissa volunteers in many capacities, which led her to the founding foundation of Second Chances in 2004. Foundations for Second Chances is a community-based organization which utilizes hands-on education, mentoring, health awareness, and community service to maximize the potential of the youth. She also serves on many boards and is very active in her community. In her spare time, she enjoys spending time with her family, eating, attending sporting events, reading, and traveling. Melissa, thank you for being on the Benny Randall Show. How are you today?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, man, you got a quite a resume there. So we're going to back it up. Since the age of 13, you were thinking about community efforts. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. So I grew up in the inner city. You know, I grew up in a single family household. My mom raising four kids by herself. And so I didn't understand it at the time why she was always giving financially, and she was always giving her time. And so I guess it was just a bug that I caught, you know. It was like, hey, we were volunteering in the community. We were doing community cleanups, you know. We were donating. We were going to food banks, you know. We were part of our local 4-H and FFA, you know. So at an early age, my mom really got us involved in civic and social, activities that just kind of, you know, stuck with me.
Very, very powerful. I'm going to have to let my daughter talk to you because she thinks 13 is about TikTok. You know what I mean? And that's her life. Yeah. TikTok, you know, she TikTok and everything else is okay. So
I don't know anything about a TikTok.
Exactly. Right. I'm right with you, sister. I am so right with you here. So was it in that time when you were younger that you start to realize about, you know, being part of something that's greater than yourself?
Yeah, it's like, you know what I mean? Being a part of something where you're actually making change And so at that young age, it's like, okay, I'm making change. But as I grew into an adult, it's like, wow, I really want to make transformational change where I'm really going into places where I'm leaving them better than what I, you know, I went in at, right? And so, like, that's kind of been my whole focus, no matter if it's, you know, community doing social responsibility type stuff or real estate, it's all about making transformational change.
And that's very powerful, because look at it now, as an adult, you are making change in developing. You know what I mean? You're creating Absolutely. Things that were not there, or you're making things that there much better. So it's amazing how a lot of times our life is the prerequisite to what's to become of us in later life. So let's fast forward, Melissa. How did you get into real estate developing? Because ain't too many women that are just jumping up talking about, I want to build a skyscraper.
Right.
You know what I mean?
That's a million-dollar question. So as I was getting older, as you're 20, you start dabbling in the stock market, stuff like that. And I realized, just looking at it, man, I won't become wealthy and I can't leave a true legacy if I'm just investing in the stock market, because I don't own enough. You know what I mean?
And absolutely.
So, it's like you just don't own enough of it. It's great to diversify, but I just don't own enough of that. And so I started to research how the top 1% of people made their money, and it was a business or real estate outside their primary home.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of hooked me. Like, business-wise, I was like, okay, I already have a business, but let me learn a little bit more about this real estate. And so my son and I used to go to Barnes & Nobles every weekend, and he would be on the third floor looking at the Japanese anime, and I'm on the second floor in the business section looking at all and reading at all the...
Love it. I love it.
It's funny, but I was on the second floor reading all the real estate investing books that I could really get my hands on,
mm-hmm.
and just really doing the research. And it wasn't an overnight type thing. It's like, that took me a year. You know, it took me a year to really learn what I thought my strategy would be, and what I thought I would be interested in. And then over time, it just kind of grew to where you knew what your niche was, right? And so it really kind of started there, is realizing that, man, I wanted more than owning a few shares in a company to, you know, own an asset that will allow me to build generational wealth, you know?
I love that, you know, because that's basically how I started, because, you know, I have quite a few real estate properties, and I ain't never took a real estate class in my life. I ain't never got no license or nothing like that. I just knew I had to win. And I knew if you had money, you could buy it. And if you bought it, then it will last longer than shoes, and it will last longer than cars or diamonds or any of that stuff. So
absolutely.
That's what I'm.
And that's the thing. I don't have an interest in that. So, like, you'll never see me wearing jewelry. I don't wear designer clothes.
Mm.
You know,
love
I
it,
wear
love
the same
it.
Thing pretty much every week. But, you know, my whole focus is, like, how do I leave that legacy? How do I, you know, even with all the hiccups in my life, how do I leave that legacy? How do I leave wealth to not only, you know, my son and my nieces and nephew, but for future generations?
Mm. So are you telling me you're doing the Mark Zuckerberg, where he bought like 20 of the same shirts and 20 of the same pants, and he just get them in?
I'm not even going to sit here and lie. I am that person. I don't have to think about it. You know, a lot of my job, which people don't realize, is like, look, I'm with inspectors all day. I'm at building the safety. You know what I mean? I don't have time to think about, like, hey, what am I wearing? Nope, just grab this, put this on, and let's go.
Love it. I love it. See, that's the beauty of that. That's the absolute beauty of that. You know, me, I'm the opposite, because when I was younger, I didn't, you know, dress up at all. I didn't even know what a suit was. You know what I mean? So now that's probably the only thing I would splurge on. And that is a tailored suit, because I got to look good wherever I'm going. I got to make it happen. But outside of that, I'm just like,
hey, to each his own. You know what I mean? We know what our places are. We know what makes us feel good, right? And so I
there
never
you go.
Got people for, like, hey, you splurge on this, that's you. I just know that this is who I am, and my focus right now is this, right? So
I love it.
This wealth. And so, you know, at some point it may be, but right now my focus, like, I'm really sharp on my focus.
And that's what it takes to make success happen. Let's talk about developing, because what I think a lot of people, when they hear people in real estate, they only focus on one aspect of real estate, and that is, I'm going to buy a house and rent it to somebody, or I'm going to buy a two-family home, like here in New York, and then you'll stay upstairs, and somebody rents downstairs, and you get them to pay you. But, you know, what I try to explain to people, the real money, I've been speaking for so many years, I don't even want to count back. But my true wealth came from, you know, creating wealth through investments, you know, and a lot of those were real estate investments and skyscrapers and things like that, right? Let's talk about that aspect and how we can get people that look like me and you to thinking about developing, not just, you know, let me go buy something or somebody already's ahead. Can you talk a little bit about how did you learn to get into the process of developing properties?
Oh, I love this part. So, you know, like I said, I spent a year, my son and I going to Barnes & Noble every weekend to learn real estate investing. And so as I dabbled in, whether it was single family homes, duplexes, other multifamily assets, office space, and stuff like that, I started to understand like what my niche is, right? And so from there, it was easy. It was really easy. It was saying like, hey, what I'm doing is I want to either invest or I want to develop multifamily or small office assets. And so from there, I just started looking like, hey, what does my zoning say I can get here? All right, I got a duplex. I can turn this into a 6-unit. Oh, I got a duplex. I can turn this into a 10-unit, you know? And so that's pretty much how it started. It was like, oh, I can buy this land and I can put a 10-unit on this land. Oh, let me do that. You know what I mean? So it's really looking into my inner portfolio and really seeing what I had there and then taking it to the next level and be like, oh, we about to develop this bad boy because this is where the money is actually made, you know?
Wow. That's what I love to hear. So let me ask you something. Give my listeners a little insight on how you did your first development property that was yours. All right. It's only just me, you, and about 3 million people right now. So, you know, just give me a little insight on how you did that when you did that very first property that you developed.
The first property, it was the trial and error property, right? We call it the trial and error.
I know that's right.
So it was like literally taking my duplex and turning that into a 6-unit and really understanding. I learned a lot about setbacks on that deal because I thought like, hey, you know, I could just take this 2-unit per the zoning, you know, ordinance. I can turn it to a 6-unit. You can, but there's all these other caveats that really kind of come with that, right? It's all these other rules and regulations that you have to follow. So one of the biggest things is setbacks. You know, one of the things is privacy issues. One of the things is drainage, and then it's, there's no water maintenance district there. You got to create a water maintenance district. You know what I mean?
Wow.
Little nuances that you're like, wow, I didn't know that. Oh, and that costs a fee? You know what I mean? So, there's another fee. Oh, the national pollution, you know, swept. We got to do that too. You know what I mean? So it's just like all of these things.
Everybody's getting paid, Melissa. Everybody's getting paid. No matter what.
It's for sure getting paid. You know what I mean? It was difficult. It was fun and it was difficult because I'm really a very methodical person, right? So I like to put puzzles together. You know what I mean? I like to put the pieces of the puzzles together. And so it was good. And the thing I have to say is as I developed relationships, it made it better. So when I developed relationships with the city, it just made it better. And I think in their eyes, they were really intrigued that it was an owner developer and she was a black woman. You know what I mean? They wanted to help me more. You know what I mean? Especially the men in the office because they're like, this girl is really doing it, you know? And so that was really helpful and inspiring because it was like, I stopped being afraid of asking questions. Like, when you're doing your first development, you have to ask a lot of questions. And even now to this day, I still carry a notebook for every specific property around that I'm developing because I have my checklist, right? And then I get there their zoning guidelines, and then I'm breaking those down versus what I want to do, you know, to see if they match up and stuff like that. So, I mean, every development is different, but your first development is special because that's where you make all of your mistakes. You know what I mean? And, you know, if they say your best lessons are your money lessons, right?
Ooh, so, you better preach that right there. Hold up. Let me tell the listeners, did you just hear what Melissa said? She said your best lesson is your money lesson. Because I'm telling you, boy, when it goes away from you and you just knew it wasn't supposed to happen that way, you're going to learn. It's somewhere in that suffering. That's where it happens to success. That takes you to success, suffering. I love that. Go on ahead, Melissa. You're going with your bad self. You killing them today, boy. Go on with your bad self.
But they are your learning lessons. And so, and then you have to know, like, every city, even though, you know, you might have a city with, like, LA, you have 55 unincorporated areas, you know what I mean? And so every area has their own different zoning, and so they're not the same. So as you're growing, you have to realize, it's like, yeah, you might think you know everything on this one, but on the next one, if it's in a different city, you know, within the same county, it's still different, you know? And so, you know, the advice I can give to people, just ask questions. Just don't let people intimidate you. Just ask questions, you know.
Here's what I love about your story, though. The most important, and I hope people got this when you said this. When you got ready to get started, you didn't say, I don't have enough money to do this. I can't go to the school to do this. You said, I'm going down to Barnes and Nobles because I know I can walk in there for free. And I know they got every other book up in there, and I'm going to read and read and read until I find out what I need to do first. That what's important. How important is it for the listeners listening today to start right where they are and to use what you have at your disposal instead of procrastinating, you know, to get started 6 months later and then you never get started? Because I find out that people's biggest issues, Melissa, is that they're doing so much thinking that they're not doing. They're not putting in the action. So talk about that.
I think the biggest thing is that people need to change their mindset, right? So that's the biggest thing. Like, I feel like, you know, sometimes in my life I've been through hell, but that's not going to stop me. You know what I mean? So I feel like you got to take it where you are, you know, and if that's going to the library, go to the library. We got the internet now. You know what I mean? Utilize the internet. And so for me, it was about, okay, why do I want to do this? You know, it was like my goal has always been to create generational wealth. Why do I want to do it? So, you know, my mindset says, hey, I want to create generational wealth. How am I going to do this, right? And so I find what I can afford, you know? And if it's something that I can't afford, that's why we have good agents, right? So
it's
really close to what we can afford. And so it's about building your team as well. And it's not... Sometimes I feel like we get into analysis paralysis where we get stuck because we don't fully understand something. But the best teacher is really getting out there and spreading your wings and making those mistakes. So when you get to bigger projects, you don't really make that many mistakes, right? And so it's like you can go to Barnes and Nobles, you can get all the free resources, but once you get those resources, it's like, hey, really turn that into something because you've already spent the time to acquire that knowledge, right? And so, and that knowledge came to you, well, it came to me, all it did was take my time, right? But it was a good use of my time. I didn't have to buy a book because I was utilizing Barnes and Noble books, you know?
There it is.
And then it's like, hey, then I found a good agent, you know, an agent that would work within what my budget was and wouldn't pressure me to be like, hey, okay, you can only afford a $100,000 house or duplex, but trying to push me to get a $500,000, you know, duplex or whatever. You know what I mean? So you got to work within what you have and build a team around what your needs are, not what their needs are, right? And so for me, that was one of the most important things. So putting that education with my actual needs, I mean, it's been a win-win, you know, since I've been doing it.
I love it. I love it. Let me ask you this question, Melissa. How many black real estate women developers do you know?
It's hard to say. I don't really see.
I mean, in your general area, and I'm asking this for a reason.
It's very little.
Right.
It's very little. So you can be a developer, no matter what your color is, or
right.
no matter what your race is. But the thing that I love about me is not only am I a Black woman developer, I'm an owner developer, so I own my stuff.
Mm, I love it.
So
the reason I asked you that question. I'm trying to, I want the listeners to understand the power of one, okay?
Right.
Because it takes one and it takes others to see that one doing something.
Absolutely.
That opens it up for others. And that's why I'm inspired by your story, because
oftentimes,
Melissa, people don't want to be the one. People just
right.
say it's not possible. There's no room for me. There's no space. We can't get money. It's like even when I started, you know, this network here, right? You know, there was people saying, well, it makes no sense because you'll never be able to compete against blase, blase, or blase, blase. But my goal was never to compete. My goal was to complete.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
And it's in that completion that I can show others who look like me what is possible. So my question to you, and the reason why I asked that question is very simple. Why don't we have more people that look like us, and how can that be changed?
I think the main issue is, I think us, we don't see a lot of us.
Mm-hmm.
We don't understand that. You know, you can be an architect, you can be a developer, you can be a civil engineer, you can be a structural engineer. I don't think that that's kind of like pushed in school. So it's not pushed in school. So they're not seeing it in their communities, because usually when they see building, it ain't really Black folks is actually building the buildings. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so I think the younger generation, they don't see us. They don't see people that look like them.
So they don't think it's possible.
Right. They don't think that the being an architect is attainable, mm-hmm. you know, they just don't. And I mean, that's really sad, because that should be a list of things. I mean, that should be on a list of things that you can do in school. You know, it's like the music industry. It's like, okay, you have the rapper, but you got the sound engineer making buku. You know what I mean? You have the producer making buku. It's all these other things, but people don't know that. And so it's great being the one, but it's even better when people can see that, hey, like she did that. Oh, I can do that too. I want to build stuff.
And that's what's important.
To start getting their kids like construction Lego sets, you know, or something like that.
That sounds very powerful.
Building stuff. Yeah. Or getting them into STEM type programs where they know like, hey, I'm really good at math. Okay, physics works here. You know what I mean? I could do calculus. You know what I mean? It's not be scared to go in those areas that will actually challenge you, but understand like, hey, I can be an engineer. You know, I can be a land surveyor. We need surveyors. We need land surveyors. They are the old timers are retiring. So there's not a lot of young people coming in to be, you know, land surveyors. And it's rare that I ever see a Black, you know, land surveyor. So I just feel like, you know, our folks, they really don't see that there are these type of opportunities out there. And so we definitely have to push that more. And for me, it was easy because I just had, you know, my drive again was to create generational wealth. I didn't care who was around me doing it. I just knew that I needed to do that through real estate. And that's what I've been doing, you know.
That is so powerful, Melissa. That is so powerful. I'm so excited about this conversation. You know, I'm very picky who I allow to come on this show, but when it's good, it's good, man. And I love what you're saying, and I love what you're doing, and it excites me, because I know how important it is to be, you know, that image that we don't see. You know what I mean? And I keep trying to tell people, no matter what you do in life, there's a space for you. And there's something
right.
that only you can do the way you do it, no matter how many people
Absolutely.
Are doing it. You know what I mean? Like, I've been a speaker all my life, and you know, but ain't nobody's voice as sexy as mine. So I don't care what nobody say. All right. I'm just joking with you, Melissa. I'm just joking with you. All right. Yeah, but you know what I'm saying? You got to know your secret sauce. You know what I mean?
And you do. And everything can't be a competition. You know, you have to collaborate. People are going to knock you. You know what I mean? It's like people are going to think less than you, and that's fine. But you got to still keep pushing. Like us as a people, we got to still keep pushing because, like, if we don't, who's going to do it for us? Nobody. You know, we don't get that slap on the wrist. We don't get that, you know, daddy, I need you to write me this check, you know, or granny, I need you to write me this check. It's not that. I mean, you got to have grit and grind in this game. And,
absolutely.
I mean, that's just real talk because it's like, it's not for the faint of heart. Like, people can see you and just completely shut you down because of the color of your skin, but you got to keep pushing through that, you know? And so
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
And, go ahead.
No. And I was like, and it's really real. You would think like, hey, we're in, you know, year 2000 and it's like, hey, we're going through all this peacefulness. It's like, no, people can really drain you. You know what I mean? That negativity and stuff like that, that can really drain you and throw you off your path. But I think, again, like we talked about earlier, if you're able to change your mindset and really understand what you want to do mm-hmm. in the real estate space, it's so many different things that you can do. I don't know not one developer, one landlord, one anybody in real estate that do the stuff the same way. I just don't. Anytime you talk to somebody about their strategy, there's a little bit of part of that that's just different, you know, and that's the beauty of it.
Absolutely.
You know, you can make it what you want it to be, you know, and that's why I like it.
I love that. And ladies and gentlemen, if you're just joining us, you're listening to The Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And we are talking to Melissa Wyatt. And we will be right back after this short break. Make sure you don't go nowhere, right? Because for a two, she about to really go down, right? I hope y'all getting these nuggets. Get out your pen and go get you something to drink, and we'll be right back after this.
Coronavirus can't keep us apart because we love you so much. From all of us at Bashani Radio app, stay safe.
Stay safe.
Stay home.
Stay home.
And keep us blasting on your phones. Bashani Radio app, always talking about everything. Download us free in the App Store. Kaboom! You heard? Call your mommy, your daddy, and all your friends and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.
If you welcome back, I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And we are having a powerful conversation with serial entrepreneur, real estate developer, coach, mentor, astronaut. No, I just added the last part in there. Melissa Wyatt right here. And we dropping it hot here on Bashani Radio app. Make sure you go to the App Store and download the free app on for iPhones and Androids, absolutely free. And then you can get this show and all the other powerful shows that we got coming in. And I tell you, you'll get more awesome information nuggets like you're getting today. All right. So we're going to get back into this conversation right here with Melissa Wyatt. I tell you, you was just breaking it down. I had to take a break because I just had to go, you know, I had to go get something to drink. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't even drink. I just had to go get, I just went and got a tall glass of water. You know what I mean? With some ice. You know what I mean? Because you was blowing it out here. But you know what I'm excited about this conversation, Melissa? I'm excited because, one, I can feel your good energy. You know, two, I can tell you love what you do. Number three, I can tell you love sharing what you do. And I'm telling you, those qualities are incredible. And I think it gives hope, especially now in these times where there's more women becoming CEOs, and that of black and brown women that are becoming CEOs and being put in positions now that allow them to see themselves. And I believe exposure is the key.
Exactly.
Speaking of exposure, let's go there. What was you exposed to that allowed your mindset to get you where you are right now? You had to be exposed to something. There was something inside of you that drew you towards where you needed to go, but there had to be that little something that was already in there. Talk about that.
Oh, wow. That's easy for me. That was my granny and papa, you know. They were, my granny and papa were black farmers, and I just remember my papa telling me the story about how he was working for this white farmer, and they were getting a brand new house built, and the guy actually gave my papa the house that my family is still in my family today for a dollar, and all he had to do was move it to a piece of land. So my grandparents actually bought the land we still own today, and the house is still there. And
wow.
So like for me, that was really inspiring, because it was like, you know, back in the day, black folks really didn't own land, and they sure didn't own a house, you feel what I'm saying? And so that was, for me, like hearing that, it just kind of gave me chills. But on top of that, it was not only did, you know, they own those assets, and, you know, at that time I didn't know, like, hey, you know, these are assets.
Mm-hmm.
It was, you know, my grandparents are entrepreneurs, so they work for themselves. They're farmers, you know what I mean? And so, and more specifically, swine farmers. And even though we had produce and stuff like that, their main source was, you know, swine farming. And so just really kind of seeing that, and then my uncles having their trucking companies, like that just really, you know, that just really inspired me. Like, man, granny and papa work for themselves, you know. They get up very early, they go to bed really late, but they get stuff done. And the other thing is like, you know, my granny and papa, they never complained, you know. And so it just really made it easy as I was getting older to say, like, yeah, that's kind of something I want to mimic. You know, I really appreciate that, because they always made sure that, you know, we were taken care of. And like I said in the beginning, you know, I come from a family where my mom was a single parent. And so I could always go to my granny and papa house if I needed something to eat. You know what I mean? If I was tired of being in the street, you know, so it was kind of like my safe haven, where it was like, it didn't matter. Just like, just come here. You know what I mean? And so, for me, that is where, when you want to say, like, hey, you look back and, you know, what kind of inspires you, like, that is what really inspired me. Their tenacity to provide for their family. They had 9 kids, you know, and so they provided for all 9, plus grandkids and great-grandkids. And so, you know, that was my inspiration.
Wow. I really, oh my goodness. I love this conversation, because, you know, you know what, why I'm inspired, because I know what I come from, and I know there's so many other peoples that can relate to your story of wanting more. And I'm so glad that you had that exposure from your grandparents. I can tell that you love them so much. You call them papa. You know, it's like that.
That's
when you know that's that old school Southern feel right there thing going on. So, you know, it's amazing though that they own their land or whatever. Why has it taken so many years for people that kind of look like us to realize how important ownership of land is? That's why they call them a landlord. You know what I mean? Because I know I learned out of desperation it was important to be in real estate. I learned from desperation, and I didn't have another option. You know what I mean? That's what's powerful. So why are we not there? Because I'd recently seen a documentary that explained how the land ownership kind of went away from people of color, based on how the laws were set up when they started to give land out back in you know, 19 something.
Yeah,
something.
It sucks because, I mean, you have a lot of places that used to have, like, you know, color restrictions. So race restrictions, you know,
wow.
On their deeds.
There
so
was su- there could... was such a thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Color and restrictions. So, wow.
Mm-hmm. And then you have to look back. I mean, you have to really kind of take it back, but it's like when you look at black farmers, right? In the 1920s, there used to be over 1 million black farmers, you know, and then now it's less than 40,000 black farmers, and less than 2% of those own their own land. So that tells you something, you know? And so I feel like that's a significant, but then the other thing too, it's like, it's cultural and social issues as well. So it's okay. You grow up in inner city, right? If you're growing up in the inner city, most of the time there you're renting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so your kids see that, you know? And then so it's okay to rent. Like, there's nothing wrong with rent. You know, it's like a lot of people, you know, they see renting as, hey, I rent something. If I have an issue, I call the landlord comes to fix it. A lot of people don't want that issue of, hey, I own something, then I'm responsible to fix it, you know? So it's a couple of different mindsets there, but I think where we talk about why a lot of us don't own, I don't necessarily think that a lot of us don't own. I think a lot of us, I don't know how to put it. I just feel like a lot of us.
Melissa, just say it in English, please.
I know. We
just in like English, please. I don't know how to put it. Just talk in English. That's all we're asking.
You know, we have that desire to own, but then you have like these restrictions when it comes to financing. Like, how many people you can ask how many ever people you want to know, that you know, like, hey, what is it to, how do you finance a home? A lot of people don't know. A lot of people think like, hey, if I get an FHA loan, I can get in at 3 to 5%, but yeah, your note is going to be higher and you have less equity than if you put 20% down.
Absolutely.
And I feel like if you put 20% down, you got more skin in the game. So you're less likely to lose that. But that's just my own interpretation of that, right? And then I feel like people, because of the banking and the predatory and all that stuff, a lot of us have just been screwed. So we don't trust banks. You know what I mean? So, and all they know to do is go to the bank to get a loan, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they might not see the value of that. So I never really... like, I want more of us to own, but I don't knock us from owning. But, like, I feel like we need to give more education about why it's important to own, because you can pass that legacy down. But, you know, where you have grandparents that do own, and then their kids, you know, the kids get the house, and then that's passed down to the grandkids, and then the grandkids sell. That's a whole nother issue. You feel what I'm saying? So it's a cyclic of like issues that we deal with because we just don't know. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can get into talking about, you know, how, you know, kids are having kids. So therefore they're not educated, you know, on, you know, ownership or because their parents weren't, you know, savvy to ownership. So there's a lot of stuff that just wasn't passed down and we have to learn now, you know? And so, I don't knock people about not owning, but I try to really encourage people, like, ownership is a beautiful thing because you can really set, you know, you can really set your family up. And then two, it's like, if you pass away and you still have a note on that, you just make sure you have insurance that'll cover that note to pay that off so your kids don't have that debt.
Right.
You know what I mean? And so even just kind of just talking about like those type of issues where you're not passing debt down, you know, generation to generation as well. But I think it's just conversations that just not had, and they need to be had more in the household, you know, when kids are young, you know. And I know that's what I would do with my son.
That's very, very powerful, because I want people to understand the magnitude of what ownership allows you to do in whatever you're doing, because when you own something, it allows you to, one, have the narrative in the way you wish the narrative should go, whether that's media,
absolutely,
whether that's development, whatever it is, but it allows that narrative to be free from censorship or whatever it may be. Number two, the beauty of ownership is a sense of accomplishment, and it's something that you can create. Well, because wealth is only created when you can one, pass it down to other people instead of passing down debt. You know what I mean? And
you
got to have something that makes money while you're asleep and when you're awake. You know what I mean? And stocks by themselves just won't do that. A job by itself just will not do that. And that's what I want on the people to understand now. Now, did you take any classes? Before you answer that, did you take any classes in real estate development before you bought that first property?
No, I did not. I had no, like I said, I had no clue. My thing was I did the research on how the top 1% of people made their money, and that was my class, you know. And so after I did that, it was like, okay, go get the education, you know. And so, you know, a lot of people are intimidated about us learning. And so it was like I didn't want people to skew. And it's crazy because, like, people always say, man, I wish I would have set up stuff like you. And I didn't understand, like, what are you talking about? Like, you're doing really good. You're doing these fix and flips, you know, you're doing wholesaling, you know, because there is a different array of like real estate that you can do. And my thing is buy and hold to be able to create generational wealth. Right. And so, and have a plan where if, when I do leave this earth, that I'm not leaving my kid and my nieces and nephews with any debt. And those insurance policies are tied to, you know, this property. And so for me, that's really important. But the other part of it is it's not only important to leave that legacy, you know, my little nephew helps me take out paint. He cleans up buildings. My son creates the recycle reuse programs at all of our buildings. You know what I mean? My mom, even though we have property management, she goes around to properties and, you know, looks at them and, you know, all that stuff. And, you know, I have ample amount of people that, like, hey, you know, this property around the corner is here. So again, it's not about, you know, just owning. It's about the people that's going to actually benefit from that. Your kids, your nieces and nephew or whatever. But it's also important for them to have a hand in it so they understand it, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Let me ask you this right here. This conversation is so powerful. Rarely do you get conversation. And let me not say this because people are going to be like, oh, what about my conversation? But I could feel the energy here, and I know it's powerful. Let me ask you this. What would you like your legacy to be when it's your time to move on?
I just want people, I want my legacy to be like, wow, you know, she understood, you know, economics, you know, she understood monetizing what she had to push it further. Right. And she took care of her family and her community. You know, for me, it's one thing, as we were talking about when we first started about, you know, transformational change. I want to be known. I want my legacy to be like, you know, whatever she did, she made sure that transformational change happened, right? And that's whether it was setting up, you know, my kid or my nieces and nephew, you know, to be recipients of what I put in hard work for, or the community that I serve, you know, like she really did her thing here. She was a teacher. She was a mentor. You know what I mean? She always helped. One of the things that I really get, and I'm really proud of this, if I die tomorrow, this would be a true part of my legacy. It's like she didn't mind sharing the knowledge. You know, she might be a bulldog, but she does not mind sharing knowledge, you know.
And that's so powerful.
So.
And that's why I like to interview people like you on the show, because this interview will live longer than you. It will live longer than me. It will be out there. Once we push it to the world, it's out there for everybody to absorb. And hopefully people who are hearing you talk and hearing how down to earth you are and hearing how focused you are and hearing that, you know, you didn't come from a silver spoon. And, you know, daddy didn't give you $1 million to start off in real estate. You know what I mean? Like, you know,
it was straight grit and grime, you know what I mean? And so I think people have to understand that, like, yeah, it's going to be hard work, and people don't see that hard work, you know? And that's the frustrating part, because you work so hard and then, you know, it's like
people think they could just wake up and get what you got. And it doesn't work that way.
You can't do that. You're going to have trials. You're going to have tribulations. You're going to have frustration. You're going to have regrets. You're going to have, you know, you have all these things. But the thing is, it's like nobody can take it away from you if you change your mindset to the right way, to where you focus on what you're supposed to be focusing on. Nobody can take that away from you.
Now, explain. Go ahead. Finish your thought.
I was just saying, at the end of the day, you know what I mean? You just focus on you.
Okay, explain to me what a food desert is that you started this farming project paying homage to your grandparents. What is a food desert? What is that?
So a food desert is essentially being in a community where food resources are scarce, right? And so being able to create projects in a community where you're bringing fresh fruits and vegetables for people to have, understanding organic versus regular type food, food to spray with pesticides, food that got nitrates and all this stuff in it. It's really providing an abundance for people to actually understand and it's for them to understand like what they're eating and you know, what is necessary, and really trying to be ample in that, right? So bringing those resources. So like I said, it's like, you know, we're trying to work on a plan where we're bringing farmers markets to communities, right? So they can pick out fresh fruits and vegetables. We're trying to bring live livestock where they could be ethically like slaughtered and stuff like that. So people in the community can eat, you know, proper instead of, you know, they're going to food markets. And I actually did a study on this where I was going to some grocery stores. I won't name the names, but what they would do, they would take old meat, right? And then they would repackage it as seasoned meat that you can actually barbecue. So people were actually buying expired meat.
Right. I actually seen that on 2020. And was like, whoa, I can't believe that they would mix it up. And some of them would mix it up with other meat that were good just to for the volume of it, and put the bad meat into twine to making it like it's new meat, like you said, and throw some season on it. And that was something different. And I thought that was like totally bananas.
It is. It's kind of crazy. So being able to stop having food deserts in communities, like teaching our community how to grow their own fresh fruits and vegetables, you know, whether that's through a community garden, whether that's through some type of hydroponic system that they have on their patio or their backyard, you know what I mean? So there's not a lack of food, you know, for them, right? And so, and I know people say, oh yeah, they can go to the food banks, they can go to the, again, a lot of that stuff is processed. We want to be able to have our community members, especially areas that we're developing in, to be able to, you know, have fresh fruits, vegetables, have an abundance of, so no kid is going hungry. You know what I mean? So
I love it.
No family has gone hungry.
Why, Melissa, why in 2020 do we still have food deserts? I don't get it.
It's crazy. I mean, it's you would ask yourself that. I just feel like, again, it's, you know, when you work in it, when you're in an inner city, it's like you almost have no voice.
Mm-hmm.
Who are they going to complain to? You know, if they complain, who's going to listen? Right. You know, and so.
And you notice the bad food always ends up in the inner cities because it's so-called cheaper, and it's easier for people to, you know, it doesn't cost much to make it. You know what I mean? And then, you know, and it's definitely not good for your health. And like they say, you feed them bad when they're young, and then you give them medication when they're older. You got them for a lifetime. So
yeah, and it's really easy. I mean, and that's the thing. You know, it's like we shouldn't have food deserts, and it's easy to, you know, it's really easy to grow fresh, nutritious food. We don't have to sacrifice with processed food, and I think people just really kind of need to understand that. And so that's why I'm doing it.
That's very, very powerful. You know, I'm really loving this conversation, and we only have a few minutes left, Melissa, but I can tell you, you are a superstar. That one I can tell you.
Thank you.
And on top of that, you can talk as much as I do, because you're just throwing it down. You ain't playing. You was like, I'm going to get you in here.
It's like, hey, real estate is something that I love, you know, and nobody can take that away from me. I just know how powerful it's been, you know, just for me. And, you know, and the legacy that I want to be able to live. You know what I mean? And so,
so someone that's listening to this conversation and have an interest in getting started in whatever real estate, wherever they're at, what would be your first three things that they need to do and start to be able to start tomorrow? What do they need to do?
What I would tell people, and this is what I tell people, you know, write down. You don't have to have your goals and objectives and stuff like that right now. Just write down what you think you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Two, while you're doing that, you need to start cultivating your mind to be changed that these are the things that you're going to do. So you want to transition from want to I'm going to do this. And then three, it's all about education, educating yourself on it. You know what I mean? Asking those questions, you know, doing your Google searches, going, well, it ain't Barnes and Nobles no more. So what, go to your Amazon bookstores or wherever you can get access to.
You can do everything on the internet. Right, yeah, you can do everything on the internet now.
So I feel like paper and pencil. So I'm still a book chick. You know what I mean? I feel like that.
I love that. She said, I'm still a book chick.
Yeah, I haven't really, the whole digital thing just, you know, really sit well with me. But it's about, you know, turning that want into I'm going to do this and then really educating yourself about it. And that you take, and it's going to take time. You ask yourself questions. And then two, it's like, hey, you know, the last thing, I know you said three, but four, is like start saving like you're buying that tomorrow, right? So it's, okay, if your rent is $1,500, but you know, like, hey, in order for you to get into that house, it's $2,000, start trying to save that extra $500. You know what I mean? So like when you get to it, it won't be a big stretch, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, and that's whatever your dreams is. If that's for you to house hack, if that's for you to, you know, go and just live in a house and you don't want to rent it out, you know, that's totally fine. Or an investment, start putting money away to be able to, you know, fund your dream of owning something. And even if you have to start with like $10, you know, $10 a month, save $10 a month, it adds up, you know, and call that your housing fund. And it adds up, you know, in a year, maybe 2 years, like you'll be able to get it. And it, I mean, if you're lucky, you can find partners and, you know, all this other stuff that we don't even really got time to go into today.
Right.
But there's other avenues that you can actually seek out, you know, too, with that. But I mean, I would start with those three things. It's like write it down, you know, what you want to do. And then number two is changing your mindset and telling yourself, I'm going to do that. I'm going to own that commercial building. I'm going to own that four unit. I'm going to own that two building or that single family home. And then just, you know, educate yourself.
I love it. I love it. So let me ask you something, Mom. We got about 8 more minutes here, and I'm loving this conversation. It seemed like we need about 4 or 5 hours, honestly, because you was just dropping it like it's hot, you know, up in here, you know, this real estate. You ain't playing. So let me ask you something. There's so many areas of real estate. If you just had to throw it out there, I know there's different strokes for different folks, but which tends to be the more lucrative? Is it multi-unit properties? Is it skyscrapers? Is it, you know, 3-4 floors? What seems to be the more lucrative in the long run as a great investment when it comes to real estate?
You know what? That's very hard because every area is different. You know what I mean? So if I don't look at it from like that part, I look at it from, okay, do you want cash flow? Right.
Mm-hmm.
So cash flow, meaning you want to have residual income coming in on a monthly basis, or do you want to buy it for appreciation? You know what I mean? So the value is increasing, right? From where you bought it, you might bought it for $500,000, but you know, in a year or two, it's $750,000, right? You might not want to buy. You might want to own notes, so you might want to lend the money. You know, there's so many different avenues that you can make because, like, hard money lenders are, you know, 10-13%. You know,
right?
So it's very hard to say because it's different strokes for different folks. Me, I like multifamily, but I have a line full of folks that be like, no, I like single family homes.
Mm-hmm.
I like mobile home parks, you know, mobile home parks, so it's easy for me to actually get into versus, you know, trying to save up all this money for a multifamily or a single family home. So again, it's all about what your interest is and just doing it and then seeing like, hey, no, I'm not that cash flow chick. I really just want the appreciation because that's a bigger bang. I feel like that's a bigger bang for my buck when I do a cash out refi. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Or when I sell it. So, you know, you got different, you know, you got different scenarios. So like I said, you know, I'm a buy and hold investor, but I mean, you might be, hey, I want to fix and flip, mm-hmm. you know, or no. I want to get it to where it's like, I pass all entitlements and I just want to sell it.
I'm
you
a cash flow so guy. I'm sorry. I'm a cash flow guy.
So it's very different, and assets in different areas are going to be different. You know what I mean? So like here in LA, you might spend upwards, you know, $1 million or something, but in Georgia somewhere, you might get something for $100,000, you know?
Absolutely.
So then that investment becomes a little bit different because the cash flow is definitely going to be different. You're going to make probably more cash flow on that smaller property in Georgia than you're actually going to cash flow in LA. But when it comes to appreciation, you're going to make a shitload of money, you know, here in LA versus, you know, in Georgia. So mm-hmm. again, it's just the asset is just different.
Yeah, you are so real. It ain't even funny.
I just cut. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. We can get away with one of them. Like the good thing about it, you know what I mean. You're talking to the CEO, so we can get away with it. But you are so real. You don't even. She was just like, you forgot we was on the radio, didn't you? And I'm going to let it stay right there so people can see how real you really are. So,
my bad.
And you said it with such ease. Like, you ain't even like say, oops. You was just gone.
But it's just, you know what I mean? It's just different. It is. It's like, you know, it's a way that, like, you have to explain it because it's like, look, you can have a multifamily asset, a 4 units in Georgia. I'm just using Georgia as an example, but then you can also have a 4 unit, you know, here in LA, and you actually losing money here in LA, but you're killing it in Georgia.
Oh, man, because
the cost difference is just different, you know? And so,
absolutely. You got more cushion.
I think you have to look at that. Exactly.
Yeah, because here in New York, you know, what you will spend for like a box, you know what I mean? The amount you would spend for a box, you can take that to Florida and get a mansion. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Because the environment is different here, you know, and versus being in Manhattan, you know, where it's not uncommon for the building to be starting at 20 million. You know what I mean? You'd be like,
right,
for what?
Right.
But that's just the environment we live in because we lack space. You know, in that environment.
Right. So your investment strategy then becomes different because it's like, okay, do I buy and hold for that? Do I want to invest and renovate that to where I'm increasing the value of it? Then I sell and flip it to something else. You know what I mean? Do I want a 1030 exchange, 1031 exchange it to get into something bigger mm-hmm. or something more comparable to this, but it has more units? So, I mean, there's so many different options when it comes to investing and where you can kind of really make your money. And again, that's the beauty of real estate investing. You know what I mean? It's not one size fit all. It's not even one area fits all because it's different.
Wow. I love that. I got like so many more questions, but you know what? We're going to have to hear. I want to, before we leave here, Melissa, let me ask you this, that I think it's very important. We talked about finance and how important it is to not only have people in developing, but to have some people that control that financing so that different projects for people that look like us can even get off the ground, the green light. And because I often tell people that what you don't realize is that, you know, when you are paying into your pension and you're paying into all of these different funds and hedge funds, they have to loan that money out to somebody. Right.
Right.
Because they want to make money. Right. Because otherwise they're just holding your money. If they don't make money for you, then they're not making money. So they take all of these hedge funds and pension funds that and your 401ks, and that's how it makes a little money. But then they go and give it to the developers who don't look like you. They come into your community and they build the building that you can't afford to live in. So you effectively right. have paid for yourself to get evicted from your own space because you don't know the value of that money that's being put from one level to the next level, and people tend to give money to people that look like them. How important it is to actually have, you know, us in that department too, or, you know, in that line of industry, because it, you know, one hand kind of washes the other. You need money to develop and it's got to come from somewhere. And unless you got a portfolio that allow you to leverage it, it's going to be hard to get that startup capital. Can you talk about that before we get out of here?
Yeah, the thing for me is it's all about relationships, right? So you talked about 401k and stuff like that. One of the biggest lenders is actually insurance companies, right? And so,
interesting. Never knew that.
So they're institutional. They're institutional lenders. So a lot of people don't actually look at them, right? Even some insurance companies are actually becoming developers. But when we talk about like us and like just really starting out, it's always good to start, have a relationship with your bank.
Mm-hmm.
Always. You know what I mean? If your bank won't give you the time of day, you go until you knock on a door and you have a bank that will, you know, and be able to develop that relationship. So that's first and foremost. But the other thing that you, even before you try to get into development, it's really understanding the finances of development, right? Mm-hmm.
You paid to play on your first deal.
Yeah. And then exactly. I did, because those are my learning lessons. And a lot of that, you know, that money was my money. You know what I mean? But, you know, as time went on, I understood my performa. You know what I mean? I understood where it's like, no, this is kind of, you know, this is a little bit too much in this column. You know, let's move it to the next column. You know, understanding your percentages. I mean, just real estate financing and as a whole is just difficult because you don't see a lot of us in real estate finance, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's hard and it can be intimidating when you're walking up to people and they're in these, you know, they're blue collar guys or white collar guys, whatever you, what do we call them? The ones in the suits, white collar, blue collar?
Whatever collar you want to call them.
Whatever collar, right? So, right? They got a collar.
There it is.
So white collar. So it would be white collar. Guys, I mean, that's intimidating. You know what I mean? Because you think they're untouchable. And it was a guy that I met that worked for an insurance company. I was at this event with UCLA and CBRE. And I was sitting at the table. And a couple of people had came to the table and talked to me. Of course, they didn't look like me. Of course, they were men that did not look like me. And, you know, we just got to talking and they asked, what did I do? And they were like, man, I wish, you know, I could do that. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? And I was like, you got all the money in the world. And they're just like, no, what people don't realize is, you know, that's my insurance company money. That ain't got nothing to do with me. And that's when it dawned on me, is like, we put these people on such a high pedestal where they just miserable because they just making these big institutional lenders, let me get my words right, a boatload of money, you know.
I like how you adjusted that because I know you was going somewhere else. Thank you for that. Thank you for that.
You're more than one. That's when the light bulb went out, because I was like, wow. It's like we create these barriers of like, hey, we can't approach. When it's like, no, we can approach. And the reason why we can approach is because they want to be doing some of the same things that we're doing, but they can't do that because they're so busy working 80 to 120 hours a week making that institution, whether it's a JP Morgan Chase, whether it's whether it's a, you know, Liberty Mutual, whatever type of insurance company or whatever institution it is, you know, for them. And they're not doing that for themselves. And so that was one of the more interesting things to me. And at that point, that's when I stopped being scared of asking for money.
Very, very powerful.
It was at that point, because I was like, dude, these dudes just want to do what I'm doing and I'm already doing it. You feel what I'm saying? And so it was like, it was kind
of. And I think a lot of people not going to realize that insurance companies are pushing up a lot of money for development. So,
I mean, you can't individually go to them because that's where your hedge funds go to.
Absolutely.
That's who, you know, these big companies actually go to.
And they got to put it somewhere. Down. Yeah. They got to put the money somewhere. So that's why I refer to the hedge funds and I refer to the 401ks, because the money has to go somewhere, and it got to go collectively in order to get to developers. But, you know, the point I was making is that it trickles back down to the people who are paying for themselves to kind of be like priced out of their own communities.
Yeah, and I like people to think about this way. Like, where can you go if you can literally put, if you want to put on the low end, 3% down to 20% down, and you own an asset that's probably 5 to 10 times more than, than what you actually put down? Where can you go and do that? So, again, it's all about changing your mindset. It might be like, hey, I had to put $100,000 down, but I got $1 million property.
There it is.
Depending on what your interest rate is. You feel what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And so look at it that way. Like, what is the asset that I'm actually getting for putting this minute amount of money down to either start building wealth that I can, and then you just put that small amount down. And I'm not saying that, I shouldn't say that it's a small amount, but put that amount down and then you can refi that.
Mm. Love it. Love it. Love it. Melissa, this has been extraordinary. Your final words?
Just keep trucking. You know what I mean? You're going to hit brick walls. you're going to have people
keep
hating on you, telling you can't do it, but just keep trucking, you know? That's it.
And Lord, I know about that, boy. I'm telling you, though. You know what? I love it. I'm going to definitely have you back on here, Melissa, because, I mean, you was just dropping it. You know, sometimes, you know, when you get people on the show, you have a different expectation. Sometimes you'd be like, oh, Lord, I'm about to pull this one out of here. You know what I mean? But you came in. You were just dropping bombs. Like, you drop bombs we aren't even supposed to drop on the radio. But, but it's all good, though. It's all good. I think they can suffer one of them, you know what I mean, coming through here. So, But I tell you, it was an absolute pleasure. If people want to learn more about you and what you do, where could they do that at?
They can literally go to our website at www.mwenterprisesllc.com, and all the information to contact us is there. They can also, we have an Instagram with the same domain there, and so they can go and they can find us there.
So that's a one big word, mwenterprisesllc.com, correct? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
All right, cool. I tell you, this has been an absolutely pleasure, Melissa, and I'm definitely going to have you back on the show, because I'm going to tell you, it was extraordinary, and I believe there was just so much more we could have gotten, but there's only so much time we could be here. You know what I mean?
Right.
But
absolutely.
But you know what I mean? Because I'm over here in New York City and you're over in L.A. You know what I mean? And it's about 9:10 here. So it's about, what, 5 there maybe? You know?
Yeah, 6:10. Yeah.
About 6:10. Uh-huh. Oh, okay. Cool. So, you know, but I appreciate you giving us some of your valuable time. And I think that this is one of those episodes that becomes a resource, because I think when people get to see you and people get to hear you, they're going to have a different vision of what's possible. And I believe that's all we can do in this world, is to inspire people by our actions, not by our words.
Absolutely.
It's about how we're doing it. See, you're not just talking about real estate. You are real estate. You can tell you have a passion.
You.
And you have more passion in real estate than I got talking, because I love to talk. And I was like, you came through here just talking to her. I was like, is she in real estate, or is she a speaker, or like she got a radio show? What's she doing?
I'm not definitely not a speaker, but I'm definitely passionate and I love to share. You know what I mean? And so I wish I could share more, but it's just honestly not enough time
in the world.
You know, in a day, but I definitely try to where I can, for sure.
When is your book coming out, Melissa?
Oh, that's the million-dollar question that everybody asks me. I'm like,
all right, so make sure when it does happen, you come back through here, because I think there's so much you have to offer, and I think that it's something that would be very valuable to those who get the opportunity to really digest, you know, your story, which I'm sure there's so many people that's going to be able to digest this on this episode here. And I think you've done what we're supposed to do, and that not only be an example, but to share in what is possible with our life. And you have to be that light, because it takes one light to light another light, one, you know, one flame to light another flame. It is just that simple. So we appreciate you here on the Benny Randall Show and Bashani Radio app.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate your kind words. I really do.
Absolutely. Ladies and gentlemen, you're listening to the Benny Randall Show. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And like always, it's my humble pleasure that you allowed me into your house and your homes. And I hope you learned something from Melissa. One thing you can absolutely say about her, she has a passion. Number two, she's humbled. Number three, she loves to share. Now, you put all of those things together and you can see why she's been blessed. You can see why she's been successful in what she does, because you can tell that she wakes up in the morning excited about what she wants to do and what she has to do. So my question to you, all you listeners, are you excited as Melissa? Are you as excited? Are you as excited about sharing? Are you excited? Are you as humbled as she is? You know, they can be a lot of times we forget, you know, where we come from, you know, but clearly not with Melissa. She knows exactly where she came from, and she know how she got here, and she knows where she going, and she ain't afraid to tell the world what it, you know, no matter what it is. And she gonna tell you as real as she can tell you. You heard that today, right? But it is not a game. It is a lifestyle. I'm your host, Benny Randall Jr., a.k.a. The Motivator. And like always, it is my pleasure. And remember, I love you, and you can't do a damn thing about it.
Call your mommy, coronavirus, your daddy, keep us apart, and all your friends, and tell them New York's number one podcast app is blowing up the airwaves, and they can't do nothing about it. Bashani Radio app. We global, baby.
Yeah, baby!
Download free for iPhone and Android in the App Store.